My name's Ulysses, and I'm an addict, y'all. And it's only through grace and mercy that I stand here, and I'm truly, truly grateful for that. And I try to show it more so in my walk than in my talk, because as you know, mouth will say anything, behaviors don't lie. And I'm real nervous, you know. The topic they gave me, because I was coming to enjoy the convention, they told me that I would be speaking, that I would be an alternate, and I figured that out, you know, most every time I come down, I speak, but you never get used to doing this. I still get nervous, you know. And they say that, you know, that my higher power is working on the inside of me. Just to qualify myself, I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And I know in order to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous, I have to be in service. I need to do some things. You know, if I say I'm a member, then I need to act like I'm a member. My clean date is April 1st, 1991. I just celebrated my 16th year. You know, thank you. But it only says that it's concrete evidence that this program works. You know, because I couldn't have done it without y'all. I couldn't have done it without the program of Narcotics Anonymous, which is the steps, the traditions, and the 12 concepts. You know, I couldn't have done it without incorporating some spiritual principles in my life and living them to the best of my ability. You know, not yours, mine. You know what I mean? Because if I try to live up to y'all expectations, I'll fall short. You know, and if y'all try to live up to mine, y'all will fall short. So what I do is I accept you for just who you are. We're talking about switching one addiction for another. I remember, man, do I remember. You know what I mean? I don't dwell on it, but I remember before I got here, you know, before I got here, I was a human garbage can. You know, anything that would change my mood, I would use. Anything that would change my mood. And it didn't have to be a chemical. It could have been a human being. It could have been clothes. It could have been shoes. You know, it could have been just my, my reservations. You know, because I like to hold on to some things. And I remember when I first started out, you know, it was fun. You know, I remember just going and stopping. You know what I mean? Because I had to be home before the streetlights came on. You know, on my steps. And then I remember that it started getting later and later and later. And I started being punished and punished and punished. But I remember when I struck out on my own, because I left home at 17. I got married. My first marriage, I was 17 when I left home. You know, still wet behind the ears. But to be out on my own, to have my own place, to party whenever I wanted to party. But then it turned into a job because I started experimenting with things. And I remember leaving and going into the service. And that's when it really took off. It really took off. Because I remember one day reaching for the doorknob and all my rings fell off my fingers. I happened to look in the mirror and my clothes looked like they were hanging on a hanger. And I said, what was I doing to myself? I went into treatment. The first time I went into treatment was in 1975, and I wasn't ready because I didn't get clean until 1991. But I remember switching up, switching women, switching jobs, just switching drugs, switching everything. And until it didn't work for me anymore, then I would switch. Everything was an addiction. But see, I remember coming to the program. And when I got here in 1991, I said that I had surrendered. And I wanted to let everybody know that I surrendered and that I was going to do this time. But all they had was a reference point from when I went into treatment. So many times when I stopped and I told them that I was through, gained their confidence, gained their trust back, and I did what I did best. So everybody was still treating me the same. So I said, I'll show them. So when I came in the program, and I don't know about anybody else, I hear some of y'all share this, everything in me woke up. Everything. I seen that person that had 10 years, had 5 years, I wanted that straight from the door. I had 30 days, I wanted 5 years. I seen the guys, you know, they were dressing nice, they were driving cars, they had all the jewelry, they had all the nice women. I wanted all that. We had what you call pigeon fest, where we go to each other's house in my network, sponsees, and we do step and tradition work. And then we save some time to talk about what's really going on with us that we don't share in the rooms. And I remember, I worked for the government for 24 years, right? And I had a real good job. I mean a real good job. And I was making real good money. And when I went into treatment, they terminated me. And I came, my brother was down here in Maryland, and he was in a recovery house. And he told me, come on down to Maryland. Because he said, I'm originally from Philadelphia. And he said that if I go home, I was going to die. And I knew if I went home that I was going to die. But I didn't know nothing about Maryland, right? Because my concept of Maryland was dirt roads, sticks, and shacks. This was the country. That was my concept of Maryland. But I came down anyway, and I went into this recovery house. And I remember coming down here, and my brother's sponsor told him to take me around, show me where the meetings was, for 2.5 weeks, and then cut me loose. I came down in the wintertime, snow, sleet, hail, all that, right? I didn't know the public transportation. I didn't have no vehicle. I had sweatsuits, the plastic sweatsuits. I had holy sneakers. You know, I didn't have anything. But my arrogance said that I was going to show these guys, I was going to show up everywhere they went. And I remember walking to meetings. I remember coming in there soaking wet. I remember sitting there, everybody sitting there drinking coffee, smiling, and I ain't see a damn thing funny. My sponsor always told me to sit on the front row, and if it wasn't no seats on the front row, sit on the floor. And that's what I did. But it just so happened that the government got in touch with me and told me that I had a retirement check coming. And they sent me a check. And y'all, when I say that they sent me a check, they sent me a check with a lot of zeros. A lot. So when I received this check, I had to let it sit in the bank for a minute. But as soon as they cleared this check, I went out and bought me a brand new vehicle. I went and brought me the Gators, the Gabs, and all that stuff, clothes, and I bought me a Mr. T starter kit. Now, what had happened was, I had surpassed all the people in my network that had time. And in my head, it told me that they were jealous of me because I had surpassed them. Now, I was one of them type of guys that at a meeting, I would jump in a car. There are people that I didn't know, and they would ask me, they would say, where are you going? I say, wherever you're going. Because I wanted to be safe, and I wanted to be with them. I hung with nothing but guys. But when I got this check and I brought the materialistic things, everything about me changed because nothing rode in my car but females. Every time I showed up, I had a car full of females. Now I'm talking about substituting one addiction for another. I would show up with my sunroof open, my music blasting, and the females getting out of my vehicle. And I had no time for the guys that was raising me in this program. So what they did, we had a pigeon fest over my sponsor's house. And what we usually do, we usually have, you know, we sit the chairs around in a circle, and then we put one chair in the middle, and that's called the hot seat. For whoever's off the beam, they had to sit in the hot seat, and we would address that ass. So when I walked into my sponsor's house, I slid up under my sponsor because I wanted to load my guns, you know what I mean, for whoever was in the hot seat. And I said to my sponsor, I said, who's in the hot seat this week? And he said, have a seat. And I looked at him like, what you mean, have a seat? He said, have a seat. And they began telling me the truth and addressing my ass. Told me that I turned my ass up to the program, turned my ass up to my higher power, and turned my ass up to my network and told them to kiss it. Now, the only defense that I had was that I wanted to fight. And I didn't want to fight the guys that were the sponsees. I wanted to fight the guys that was at the top of the network that had the time because they the one that started this shit, you know. But wouldn't none of them fight me, not one of them. They continued to address my ass. They continued to tell me the truth. The only thing that I could do from there was I broke down and started crying. I'm talking about them crocodile tears. I ran out his house, jumped in my vehicle, started my vehicle, and they ran out behind me. Cut my vehicle off, took the keys, and told me they wasn't finished with me yet. I thank God for them brothers because they saved my life. They love me more than I love myself. And that's when I had 3 years. I got 16 now. And that hasn't happened again. It hasn't happened again. I got females in my network that I'm real tight with, but I deal with the brothers. And I keep a newcomer in my hip pocket. I keep one. I got a lot of sponsees. Some of them is doing some work and some of them ain't. I remember my sponsor telling me, because see, I thought I was God's gift to the world. And any time a female hugged me, she wanted me. And I thought that I could talk real good. Now, I don't know if anybody can relate to being a hoe in the program. But I was what they called a hoe. I was sleeping with as many as I can in the program. They pass me around like a pork chop. They pass me around. They would say, who you with this week? They would say, I would walk up to the females at the meeting to go get a hug, and I would hug maybe one of the newcomers. And the first thing would come out of the female's mouth is, let her live, Ulysses. Let her live. Now, I have females in my life that are my very, very good friends, that I don't sleep with. I have newcomers in my life that I share information with, that I don't sleep with. I'm talking about substituting one addiction for another. I like to shop. I love to shop. I like to look good. I love to look good. I like to buy shit, even with money that I don't have. But I find myself sitting there talking about, how did I get here again? And y'all, I'm not talking about just in my early years. I'm talking about now. I like to shop now. I like to do some things. I like to substitute. I like to anesthetize my feelings. But I know, because it tells me in the second part of the first step, that I cannot manage my feelings or my emotions by myself. I know that if I don't bring it to the light, that it's not going to die. I know that if I keep it a secret, that it's going to eat me from the inside out. But if you're like me, it's some things that I just like to do. I just like to do them. Not saying that I'm not working on anything, because I do step work. I got sponsees that push me to do step work. And at the beginning, I said, mouth will say anything, behaviors don't lie. See, I got people in my life that will pull me up on my stuff and don't care how I feel. They'll tell me the truth. And I'm okay with that, because I do the same thing. See, a lot of times, I put it like this. You know, a lot of times I hear a lot that people say time don't matter. And I need to tell you that that's a lie. Time do matter for a few reasons. Because you don't get experience unless you get time. You don't get wisdom unless you get time. And you don't get no freedom from active addiction unless you get time. Time does matter. And most of the time, the people that's talking about time that don't matter don't have no damn time. See, I was at an anniversary. I just had an anniversary last week. You know, and I talk a lot. You know what I mean? I share a lot. You know, and I said I wasn't going to share my anniversary, and I really didn't share. But I went from the newcomer to the old-timer, sharing at my anniversary. Because, see, everybody got a message. Everybody got a message to do or what not to do. And they tell me that you got to get a message before you can give a message. But see, I know that you don't have to open your mouth and you can give a message. I know that. But I'm one that I'll tell somebody in a heartbeat to hold on to their damn opinion. Share your experience, strength, and hope. That's what I share. My experience, my strength, and my hope. Opinions kill people. They kill people. Because if you was anything like me, when I was out there, I had opinions on all world affairs. All world affairs. You could start the sentence, and I would take it from there. Not knowing what you was going to talk about, but I would go on with it and try to sound real intelligent. You know, trying to sound like I know what I'm talking about. But one thing that I didn't know, that I do know today, is I didn't know how to stay clean. But I do know how to stay clean today. I know and I live which y'all told me to do. In our basic text on page 76, the first paragraph, the last sentence, it says, we have never seen a person that lived the program of Narcotics Anonymous relapse. Huh? Huh? Never. You know, I hear a whole lot of times, and I did it myself, because when I say I hear, I'm talking about me. I used to come back in the program and talk about our relapse. But what I did was I continued to use. Because you got to be in something and doing something in order to regain it. Life is good. How much time I got left? Keep talking. Okay. We're talking about switching one addiction for another. And I know that everybody in here can relate. You know, I at one time was addicted to work. And I still like to work. You know, because I like money. You know what I mean? But my health fails me because I have diabetes. And with this diabetes, if I don't take care of myself, get my proper rest, it'll take my life too. I go to work sick, not feeling good, because I want that money. But what my sponsor told me, he said, you know something? If you drop dead today, that job still won't be there, and that somebody's going to do your job. Somebody's going to do your job. So I found out that long as I recognize it, identify it, internalize it, I can work on it. I can get better. And that's what I come here for, to get better a day at a time. And I'm going to close with this. If it's anybody here in this room that don't have a sponsor, it's suggested that you get one. Because if you're sponsoring yourself, you're sponsoring a damn fool. That's what you're doing. You're sponsoring a damn fool. Because my interpretation of what I read is going to wrap around me for my comfortability. He told me to become an informed member. And that's what I do. I live this thing. It's good. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening to me. My name is Ulysses, and I'm an addict, y'all.
And for our second speaker, we're going to have Vincent.
That's right. My homie.
That's right. Love you. See there? Someone set me up. Look at that. Hi, family. I'm another addict named Vincent.
Hey, Vincent.
And I'm just so happy that I ain't take a hit today. You know, I got to keep that foremost up front. For me, this whole thing is about Vincent not picking up a hit. And here's the one that's not acting right. It must be from another fellowship.
That's not nice.
I know, I shouldn't say that. I'm going to almost apologize. I ain't want to say that. Once again, family, I'm another addict named Vincent.
Hey, Vincent.
And I'm glad to see you all here, because without you, there'd be no me. I'm clear. I get real, real excited about this thing called recovery, because I'm living better now than I've ever had in my entire life. I can honestly say, on this day, I'm not mad with anybody about anything. And I'm just so grateful that you all have taught me how to navigate through this thing called life. I really, really need to know two basic things. One, how to make a living legally, and two, how to live. Now, the second one is much more important to me than the first, because I've learned from my experience that a fool and his money will part. But in here, by you all showing me how to live, things just aren't that bad anymore. So I'm just so grateful that I ain't take a hit, because I've seen what happens to those of us who do. Because sometimes my disease wants me to think that it does not exist. It wants me to forget and only remember the good stuff. My clean date is August the 10th, 1989. And since I've been here, I have not found it necessary to use. See, that's why I get excited about Narcotics Anonymous, because even growing up, I always wanted to have a position or philosophy that I could stand on. I could tell people to go screw themselves and shit. You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to feel what I was getting ready to lay down was like feral. But none of that shit never worked, man. You know. But here, see, Narcotics Anonymous, especially if you're new, please listen to me. Narcotics Anonymous, we have a basic text. There's two books in it. Book two are personal stories. You may buy into some, you may not. That was my experience. I did not buy into all the personal stories. But you all said book one is the program. It's the 12 steps, the 12 traditions of our concepts. And it simply says, listen to this, this is what I love about it. Those of us who live this program become so grateful, listen to this, we never get high again. That's it. I'm talking about never. My disease was so awful, and I used to always think I was a soldier. And I can remember early on, I went to this party at 15. I ain't come back until I was 42. And I got to remember, I could no longer wait till I get back home to my favorite windowsill. Something about the windowsill. But I remember telling myself, I says, look, all right, I had to take a little hit before I get out of here. I had to get that thing off me. I don't know what it was, right? But anyway, I had to get that thing off me, and I tell myself, all right, just take a little side puff. Don't even do a front jump. Be cool. You still got some stuff left. You know, you still look decent. Take a little side puff. But remember, Vince, whatever you do, don't look on the floor. I remember sitting there and shit, and, you know, I want to check it out. You know, like, I don't trust this guy. He's been doing this shit forever, you know. I mean, I be touching people I don't know. You know what I mean? Anything that popped, I move, I learned how to look on the table without seeing anything. I don't know if somebody here knew what I was talking about. I don't ever want to go through. I mean, like, it just got to a point. I didn't mind you talking to me when I used, but don't look for an answer because I wasn't with you. We may be in the same location, but we weren't in the same space. I had my own. People talking about these out-of-body experiences, man, through spiritual or awareness. Tell you about some out-of-mind experiences. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I wish somebody could help me here, but this program is just an awesome thing. So I don't know anything about relapse. And I recall that, like, and I know, and I heard what my homeboy here said. He said some a lot of good stuff, because substitute one for another. See, my disease is one of a thinking disorder. You understand what I'm saying? See, if I had everything perfectly well for myself, physically, emotionally, psychologically, the most I could ever see is just my side. That's only half. See, I never even used to think about that. I used to know what you were going to say before you said it. And even when you said it, I really know what you really meant. So I might as well say, fuck you, before you start talking. Because I'm going to do what I want to do anyway. And I've only been wrong one time in my life, and I just felt like fucking off. And I knew I was going to be wrong, because I'm always right. But that was the kind of disorder that I have, and it has not went anywhere. So I can sit down and just talk and listen to a person, and I can just recall so many incidents that if your energy was wrong, I would get mad before you even finish. Only until I've learned this process how to, like, just stop. I just had to tell myself, Vincent, don't agree, don't disagree, just listen. And when I started practicing that principle, I discovered, family, that I was getting mad about a lot of things for so many years for nothing. Only if I would just stop and listen to what somebody trying to tell me. Only until I got into this process, where my disease is so deep, man, it would tell me something completely different. So I know it's very, very important for me to learn how to respond to life when it shows up, not necessarily react. That's how deep this illness I have. And with all these years, with all the blessings, every now and then, my disease will tell me, like, psst,
Hey, Vincent. Look. If you just smoke a joint. He said, really? He said, nobody lost their gig for a joint. You won't be like your boy, the bank robber. You know how you got? Take a hit, can't talk. Went to the bank after you took a hit. Talk about. I'm talking about when I got here, people had time, right? And so, well, even with time, they see at the end of my road, I was living below hell. So why in the hell do I want to go back to hell? Now, you all been telling me who've been blessed to come back that it did not get any better. So I seen people with like double digits used again. So I know that clean time won't keep me clean. I have to recover if I'm going to change the outcome of my lifestyle. I'm not talking about improving the quantity of my life, but the quality of my life. That's become extremely important to me because I'd rather be peaceful than right any day of the week now. See, I think everybody got to be, has the privilege of being as wrong as they want to be. And so do I. And I've learned how to leave this process where it is. So I didn't have the luxury of coming here thinking that if I get caught up by making these unhealthy choices, it's just like using. Because sometimes I find myself relapses, not with a chemical, but knowing I shouldn't do something. Knowing I shouldn't do it. Even the judge say, don't go within 200 yards of the house. Now, he done told me. He done told me. But if people call up, come on by and we can talk. Now, he done told me, don't go. But my disease said, man, y'all just going to talk? You understand what I'm saying? I could ask my sponsor, my network, they say, man, don't do it. It's all right. But yet I'll do it anyway. Then all of a sudden I got that other disease of my primary illness, addiction, that again disease. Damn, I got locked up again. I done lost my job again. That woman done put me out again. I mean, it was a long time before I figured out that I was homeless. My name was never on the lease. That's one thing about Montgomery County, Maryland, where I live at. You could be paying a mortgage, don't matter. She called, you got to roll. They won't even let you go upstairs and get your toothbrush. I'm talking about my experience. Probably couldn't argue because I had all kinds of drugs in my sock. I just wanted to roll out in peace. You understand what I'm saying? But what I'm saying, family, is that it's very important for me to recognize that when I get caught up in a feeling, see, this is a program that helps me to learn how to leave myself alone. See, none of you could ever do to me what I do to me on a daily basis. I will volunteer myself with the good intention of making you happy, make myself miserable. See, I ain't doing that no more. I am not only valuable, but I matter today. But my disease will make me believe that you're more important than I am to me. I wish somebody knew what I was talking about. So I mess around and go to this trying to please everybody thing. That now I'm sick, so I'm all caught up, and then I'm using. See, I had to discover, as a result of having disease, I could never afford the luxury of making a permanent decision on a temporary feeling. See, one of the times, see, when I get caught up and I'm angry, I can make a decision to say something to my child, call him a name. See, that's just permanent, man. Or my boss gonna make me a job, make me mad on the job, and I'm gonna walk out. I don't need this job and quit. That's just permanent, man, because my goddamn credit report reflects when I ain't working. I don't know if y'all know what I'm talking about, but I'm talking about being greater than my illness. I am or was a high school dropout, and I have special learning needs. As a result of this program and practice and principles, I've now have gotten a GED. I've now have gotten a bachelor's degree. I've gotten a master's degree. I've gotten another master's degree. And all I've done was this. Raise my hand and learn to ask for some help. As opposed to trying to solve everybody's problems, I'm going to trade the addiction of drugs to try and be a goddamn hero.
and end up being a zero. One of the biggest words I had to learn how to use fairly was the word no. You all taught me how to say, I got three responses in most cases. Yes, no, or let me think about it. Now, if you bum rush me on and let me think about it, I'm going to say no, because safety must come first. Because most of the time, when somebody asks me something, it has nothing to do with me. What I'm saying is that my disease will have me substituting, trying to make you feel good at my expense. It's almost like taking somebody on a trip when you broke. So you're going to try to juggle your mortgage money or, you know, your car note money. No, you can't. Now, you knew this convention was going to be here this year. When I left last year, this convention, I bought my registration because it was only $15. It was done. Now, God willing, I'm coming back next year. At the end of the convention, I'm going to spend $15. Now, today, this shit jumped 100%. I ain't knocking in A. God bless the people who got it like that. But I learned that proper planning prevents poor performance. So just because you got an emergency don't mean I got one. But before, I'll be trying to rescue you. I was somebody who knew what I was talking about. See, I'm talking about that stuff. Think this. My wife and I, when we used to pray together, she used to rub my hand. Think this. We'd be praying. She'd be rubbing it right here and shit. And I'd be like, shit was so irritating, right? I couldn't even focus on God, nobody, man. I wanted to change my religion a couple times just because she was like, you know, so she wouldn't pray with me, right? So anyway, this one particular time, she's praying. She's long-winded and shit. I'm like squirming. I'm trying to be patient and tolerant. And I said to myself, I just couldn't take it. I said, would you stop it? Man, she looked at me. She said, what's the matter? You know how when you say something, you're committed now, right? I said, shit, I'm about to free myself. I said, I hate that you rub it. It gets red. I said, it's so irritated. I can't focus on God or nobody. I just hate it when you just do that. She looked at me, and here's the hit. She said, why didn't you say something? See, a lot of times I found myself putting up with shit, man, going through unnecessary pain. Look, as a result of my illness, I've discovered that I've held resentments much too long. I've been angry at people and discouraged much too long. I've even been in relationships beyond their expiration date. I mean, always trying to hold on to stuff, right? Trying to make the situation more than what it really is. But see, I need courage. I need courage. And see, sometimes I'm not always there. That's why I keep coming to these meetings, so I come here. Because you know what, family? When I am honest with you, I feel better in the relationship with myself. I got to quit being fearful of how you're going to be. I used to get mad and come up with plans and strategies about situations that haven't even occurred yet. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to come back this way. I'm talking all kinds of plans. I was somebody who knew what I was talking about. I'm talking about substituting, right? One drug for another comes more informed. I heard my brother here talking about the shopping thing. Now, I know how I can get. And some of that shit worked for me. I don't know about anybody else. My wife said, look, why don't you divorce me? I said, okay, that's what you want. I'm living in a 6-bedroom, 5-bathroom house. I got to go to an apartment. Now, that shit don't feel good. So I went and bought me a Mercedes-Benz. I didn't mind then. What I'm saying is that proper planning prevents poor performance. When I came in here, I owed the IRS $51,000 by themselves. But you all showed me how to face that in the 6 steps says, Vincent, the only thing you got to do is keep moving, man. Keep moving. Do not allow your disease to make your choices. Do not live a fear-based life. See, that's the hit. And I'm talking to us because I have to remind myself, you all have taught me so many wonderful things in this process because you told me, and it says in literature, I got to be patient and tolerant to me. It ain't about showing you how well I'm living or showing the world how well I'm living. This is an inside job. This job that I have, that I commit to, is restoring myself not to sanity, but to spiritual conditioning. And I want to say this in closing, we're going to open this thing up if that's permissible. This disease attacks me spiritually first, then my spirit gets real low, my thinking gets messed up, and I start acting out on those thoughts. I do that so much that I start looking real bad, and people start saying, what's the matter with you? You all said I recover and reverse. I start looking a little better, my thinking get a little clearer, but it's my spiritual conditioning. See, I don't want to find myself in this process living so low that the goddamn hit looks like a step up. I mean, I should ask myself, why would a person use again knowing what's coming? You know what's going to happen, Vincent, when you take a hit. You're going to have a immediate clearance sale. Everything must go. I mean, I know that because I've done that. I had four cars and ended up with a bike and the front tire stayed flat because I didn't have any money to buy a spare. All my spare change went to my spare hit. So what I'm saying is that, but yet, I don't want to find myself living in such a way that to relieve this illness of life, that I want to pick myself up out of it by reaching out for a goddamn hit. A high is the lowest place I've ever been in my entire life. A high kept me crawling on the goddamn floor. A high kept me looking at my children, not claiming them, even though they're sitting there, Daddy, where's the goddamn cereal? And yet I know that it will happen again because when I use, nothing and nobody or anything matters. There's no person, there's no place, no thing, no child, no career, nothing is more important than my recovery. That's where I'm at with it. I cannot afford the luxury of allowing my emotional unmanageability to make my decisions. When I get caught up in the feeling, I gotta stop and wait till it subsides. And it's really bothered me that way. Before I make that final decision, I need to run across somebody. These are the things, family, that you all taught me how to do. And just for the day, life isn't that bad. You know, we talk about this word insanity, right? And I know for me, and sometimes as we mature through our process, we revisit our understanding of how this thing works for us. Now, this is what crazy me. They say insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting what? Different results. And here's for me. This is insane. Vincent, you're an addict. So, like, when you go to those meetings and people talk about their relapse, 99.9% of them say they stop going to meetings. So if I'm an addict and if I don't go to meetings, I'm crazy. You understand what I'm saying? I'm behaving insanely if I get so busy with living that I start dying undercover. So when I see my sponsees at a meeting, because I don't take people to meetings, I meet you at a meeting to help you get home. Because I've learned I can't recover for nobody but me. I got to work on my recovery every day. I go on vacation, but my disease don't. You understand what I'm saying? Am I making sense here? This disease that we have is an awful thing. Everything that I loved and cared about and loved to care about me, I used to sneak away from them. I used to lie to them just to go somewhere to get by myself and try to kill myself in peace. That's a hell of a thing. When you lie and deceive and deny everybody who care about you, and you're going to mess around and find a place where you can destroy yourself in peace, man. Now, my disease tells me that's the way we do it. And I don't know if I'm making any sense or anything like that. You know what I mean? So this is a program of not only reading, because on our last piece of literature, it says only after understanding, you got to get some understanding. And then when you don't know, you got to come in here, because this is what we do. We will tell you how to not take a hit. We ain't going to tell you how to get married. We ain't going to tell you about your health program. We're going to tell you how to not take a hit. This is what we do. This thing work, but you got to live it, because you can have all the information and recite, but if you can't apply it, you might as well stop reading. See, I got to practice spiritual conditioning, because that's the only thing going to keep me from relapsing. That's what the literature says, that's what you all say, and I'm banking on the literature. Other things may work, but I need a personality change. I'm so glad I stopped arguing with people 15 years ago. I mean, listen to me. These are the things I've done because when I get mad, I feel bad. When I yell, I stop yelling. I love how you guys love me. And I love this program, Narcotics Anonymous, because it's a format.
It tells me all the time, Vincent, shut up. It says when things are out of order, pray. The only prayer I ever experienced not to work was the one I didn't pray. See, I wish I could say something profound, but it's already been said. If I just don't use, life is better. And this process here is like my man, take this on, sit down. These two guys at work, construction dudes, they working real hard. So now it's time for a lunch break. So they go up, you know, they sit up real high, and guys open up his lunch and everything. This one guy, he start to squirm and shit. And man, look at him. Yeah, well, he opened up his own lunch. He got a little roast beef and some cheese, and tomatoes, and some fruit, triple chocolate cake. This other guy over here squirming and shit. Damn! Guy said, what's the matter? He said, peanut butter. Peanut butter, peanut butter, peanut butter. The last 90 damn days, peanut butter. The guy said, damn, man, why don't you just ask your wife to make you something different? Oh, she ain't gonna do that. He said, well, how you know? He said, because I make my own lunch. In here, family, we make our own recovery. When you walk in the door, we take your blame thrower. You just gotta let it go. If you do what we say, not what we suggest, because we really tell each other how to live. If I can just be humble enough to keep listening, I can keep enjoying my Porsche. That's all because I didn't take a hit. Now, that's deep to me. Y'all don't understand what I'm talking about. I was homeless when I came in here. I got places in more than one country. Currently, I'm living in more than one state on a daily basis. And I got the same learning disabilities. I never applied myself to anything. I was always afraid to try because of self-centered fear. So I can't substitute one drug for another. It's not even about a drug. I thought it was about drugs was my problem. I'm the problem. They give me a mirror today and see the miracle. Yeah, and that's what else I seen in that mirror? The biggest problem I'm ever going to have in my life is the one in the mirror. All I got to do is let you guys help me. And if I just don't take a hit, this too shall pass. My name is Vince. I'm another addict. Thanks for letting me share.
Hi, family. My name